uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this Star Wars Frenzy Day. Might be appropriate for us to open the program with a quote from Darth Vader.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Wrong Darth Vader. Here, Darth Vader.
I've been waiting for you. We meet again at last. The circle is now complete. I am the master.
That wasn't the real Darth Vader either. Here he is!
Either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
Yes, a scene from last night's movie. Those of you who saw it, or today's movie, tomorrow's movie, this week's movie, yes, indeed. You're either with us or you're against us. A story, and much more to come, by the way. We're going to talk about China. In fact, I want to start with that. Actually, I'm going to get to that second. There's an interesting story, front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday, that is one of those kind of timeless things that really isn't being attended to. And why this would be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal and not in any other newspaper in America completely baffles me. Actually, in a way, it doesn't. Because what we know, thanks, Paul, what we know is that there's, the Wall Street Journal, they don't care. I mean, it's the rich talking to the rich. They can, they can say, hey, we're doing pretty good and the average person's getting screwed. And, the average person isn't reading the Wall Street Journal. But your local newspapers, no, they're not going to talk about that stuff. They're not going to. Not a chance. So here this headline. This article, excellent article, Ellen Schultz. And, literally, this was the upper right-hand corner. This is like the lead story. When pensions change hands, retirees can get lost in the shuffle. And Ellen Schultz tells the story, and it's a very well-written article. It's very, very well done. For 18 years, Charlie Craven, a retired mine supervisor in Tucson, Arizona, received a pension of $348.84 a month. Now, this doesn't sound like big bucks to you or me, but to Charlie Craven, that's what he lived on. But in late December, by the way, I just added that myself. That wasn't a quote from the article. The end of the quote was $348 a month. Back to the article. But in late December, instead of a check, he got a letter saying an audit shows he was receiving the benefit in error. The letter said, and I quote, "You must repay the overpayment of $18,363.44 in one lump sum by January 31st, 2005. If you are unable to make a one-time lump sum repayment and wish to set up a repayment plan, your payments are as follows, $1,530.29 per month for 12 months. The letter added, if you do not comply within the stated time frame, the plan sponsor may take additional steps, such as reporting the overpayment to tax authorities or taking more formal collection action against you. Now, this is a guy who's 79 years old. He's nearly blind from macular degeneration. He had to have a friend read him the letter. And he says, how can they come to me all these years later and tell me this? This would exceed his monthly Social Security payment, just the monthly repayments. And then they point out, it's not just this one guy. Mr. Craven is one of millions, that's with an M, millions of pensioners whose benefits have been shuffled around in corporate deal-making over the past two decades. And when pensions get lost in the shuffling, retirees can find the deck is stacked against them. If a company says the pension should be smaller or not paid at all, proving otherwise is up to the recipient. No small burden for an aging retiree who typically has little grasp of either federal benefits laws or corporate restructurings. Now, let me translate this into English. What they're saying here is that back before Ronald Reagan came along, back before conservative economics, trickle-down economics, voodoo economics came along, we had laws in the United States that said, if you have a pension, it's protected. If you work for a company, that company has to protect that pension. In the event of a disaster, there's the Pension Benefits Guarantee Corporation, the PBGC. But by and large, your pension, I mean, there were strong laws. Jimmy Hoffa was prosecuted by Bobby Kennedy for messing with the pension fund that the Teamsters had. I mean, it wasn't just pensions owned by corporations. It was, you know, any kind of pension. If you had a pension, and in fact, you know, the story is Jimmy Hoffa was Santos Trafficante. There was a Carlos Marcello. No, Santos Trafficante had to go up to, or not personally, he sent one of his guys up to Washington, D.C., to track down Jimmy Hoffa, because Jimmy Hoffa was running around Washington, D.C. This was early in 1961, with a rifle with a scope mounted on it, trying to assassinate Bobby Kennedy. And you know, he flipped out, because Jimmy Hoffa had been busted in the Sun Valley land deal. And this was in 1960, when Nixon was vice president. And he had been taking pension funds from the union and invested it in this real estate deal, the Sun Valley real estate deal down in Florida, one of the most corrupt states in the country, and got busted for it. And so Hoffa gave a $500,000 cash bribe to Richard Nixon, and this is all on the record. This isn't conspiracy nut stuff. This is pretty straightforward stuff. Hoffa gave a $500,000 cash bribe, showed up at the White House with $500,000 in a suitcase, and gave that to Richard Nixon. This was before the 1960 election. And we know that some of that money apparently made its way to E. Howard Hunt's wife, because she was in a plane that got blown out of the sky, and, you know, thousands of dollars rained down as a result of that. A little anecdote, but in any case, so Hoffa bribed Nixon, and the charges got dropped against him. And then, unexpectedly to Hoffa, JFK and Bobby Kennedy get elected, and Bobby goes back and says, hey, we're going to prosecute this guy. And Hoffa's like, hey, I paid the bribe. I'm not supposed to be prosecuted. And so Bobby is prosecuting him, so Hoffa says, okay, we'll fix this. I can't bribe the Jack Kennedy, but I can bribe the jury. So he bribes a couple of jurors. And Bobby catches him. And so now, instead of facing, you know, 1 year for pension fraud, now he's facing 20 years for bribing jurors. And so he's running around Washington, D.C. with a rifle with a scope mounted on it. Santos Trafficante goes up and stops him, says, you can't do that. You can't kill Bobby Kennedy. And thus began the tale of the death of Jack Kennedy. That's a whole other story. But the point is, we used to have, before Reagan came along, we used to have laws in this country that you don't mess with people's pensions. Whether you're a union, whether you're a corporation, whether, you know, whoever, you mess with people's pensions, you go to prison. And then Reagan said, you know, corporations should just really do what they want. It's just workers, after all, who we're trying to, you know, who these laws are supposed to protect. And the workers aren't the ones who pay the bills at the Republican Party. So, you know, screw the workers. If a corporation wants to merge with another corporation, and that's a nice way to get rid of their pension liabilities, and that pension funding gets transferred to another company, and then that company goes bankrupt, and then the assets are bought out by another company, and it continues to do business only under a third name, and now all of the pensioners are standing out on the outside in the cold looking in, that's their problem. And the Wall Street Journal does a great job of laying this out, how it all comes from these, in fact, they've got from these mergers and acquisitions, the M&A mania of the 1980s, the frenzy that began under Reagan, and has been largely uninterrupted ever since then. In fact, there's a graph on the front page, thousands of mergers, acquisitions, and spinoffs over the last 20 years have caused pension obligations to migrate, often numerous times. And they're talking about M&As, mergers and acquisitions. And the graph is 2,500, 5,000, 7,500, 10,000, 12,500, the number of deals. And you go back to 1984, zero. 1985, you're pushing almost 2,000. And then it goes all the way up to 99 or 2000, it's hard to say which year it is. It looks like it must be 98 or 99. It was nearly 12,500. of these kind of deals. And who gets screwed? The workers. Companies get bigger and bigger. They get more and more powerful. They're able, not just the workers, by the way, small and medium-sized businesses get screwed as well. They're more able to muscle out competition out of the marketplace. This is what's called laissez-faire capitalism. Capitalism isn't in and of itself a bad thing, but it does have a tendency to behave like cancer. And so, you know, just like in the body, we have regulatory systems in the body that keep any particular cell, any particular organ from essentially taking over, from saying, okay, I'm going to take, you know, and running amok. Similarly, in the body politic, we have regulatory systems to prevent these kinds of institutions from behaving cancerously, and they're behaving like cancer. And they are eating alive the people who make them wealthy, which is the workers. I mean, without the workers, what do you have? Nothing. Well, now you can go to China, because the laws have been changed, thanks to Bill Clinton, and, well, it started with Reagan again. Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush. So, this is, you know, and why is it not, why, it's on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, as I said. Well, because it's the rich folks talking to the rich folks, and they can say, oh, gee, isn't this interesting? This guy's out in the cold. And they go through and they tell the stories of a whole bunch of different people. I mean, this is a long article. It jumps to page, page A10, right off the front page. And it occupies half the page, or, you know, a good solid third of the page. And they're talking about BP, and they go back, and they talk to this company, it was this company, and this company bought that company, and, you know, blah, 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 and after his death. And Raytheon spokesman, an email, says Raytheon regrets the Ackerman's unfortunate experience, you know, when the $31,000 overpayment was discovered. Well, why was it an overpayment? Well, because the fund was continuing to pay because they didn't realize that they had been bought out. This company had been bought out by another company, which had been bought out by another company, which had gone through some kind of bankruptcy or had something like this, so that they no longer owed anybody any money, because that's how the laws are structured. Because under the bankruptcy laws, corporations can use bankruptcy to screw average people. But under the bankruptcy laws, particularly now with the new bankruptcy bill that's been passed, average people can't get out from underneath the money they owe corporations. Welcome to Bush world. And I, you know, pardon me for sounding cynical, but, you know, this is the world of conservative economics. This is the world of Republican economics. You vote Republican, or you vote for conservative Democrats, the Zell Miller Democrats, the Democrats who voted for the bankruptcy bill. This is what you get. This is the absolute predictable result. This is what you get. And this is why it's so important that Americans start standing up and getting politically active and saying, hey, wait a minute, we thought that you have an economy so that the people can have a decent life and the country can have safety, security, we can have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We thought that's why you had an economy. Are you trying to tell us that the economy is simply there to suck the life force out of the people? That the workers are there to support the economy? I thought the economy was there to support the workers. This is a debate that we haven't had in the United States since the Great Depression. And it's because it was conventional wisdom until 1980... And then Reagan came along and the big lie started. And now it's a debate that we need to be having again, or a discussion, let's say. Why do you have an economy? Why does government promote an economy? 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's get some democracy started here in the United States of America. We can do it. You can do it. Contact your member of the United States Senate or House of Representatives, 1-877-SOB-USOB. We'll get you through to them. Or if you want to pay for the call, you can call 202-225-3121. And if you want to call the program, Tom Hartman Program here, our number, 866, toll-free across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. Outside the United States, 503-248-0620.
Now, the DeLay Political Death Watch.
Yes, Tom DeLay, Bill Frist, too. Tom DeLay is now being supported, shall we say, by the Free Enterprise Fund. a right-wing crank group directed by CNBC's Larry Kudlow and supply-side hack Jack Kemp. They bought $100,000 worth of TV ads to defend Tom DeLay. Think Progress, the folks at thinkprogress.org, they say they couldn't be happier. For weeks, they've been trying to get the media to pay attention to DeLay's greatest free market accomplishment, what DeLay calls his perfect petri dish of capitalism. He says it's like his Galapagos Island. That's where Darwin, of course, made his great discoveries. The Northern Mariana Islands. There, human brokers bring thousands of mostly young girls to work as sex slaves and in festering sweatshop garment factories. Clothes can be made there with a misleading Made in USA tag, since the islands are U.S. territory. And for years, DeLay has, to quote Tom DeLay, helped lead the fight, end quote, to keep it that way. This is Tom DeLay's free enterprise dream, the conservative free enterprise dream, the Republican free enterprise dream, sweatshops, exploitation, and zero employee rights. When Tom DeLay visited the islands in 1997, he toasted the sweatshop owners as, quote, a shining light who represent everything that is good about what we are trying to do in America and leading the world in the free market system, end quote. In fact, even just last week, he said that the sex slaves and sweatshop garment workers are, quote, beautiful people who are happy about what's happening, end quote, in the context of saying, no, they don't need a minimum wage law there. Yes, indeed. Tom DeLay. Only a guy like Tom DeLay. As they say, a man only his mother could love. Alan in Trumansburg, New York, on the line. Hey, Alan, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. You told us quite a while back a story about the U.S. Comptroller General David M. Walker. He's in the paper, yesterday's Washington Post. There was a meeting between him and somebody from the conservative Heritage Foundation and the more liberal Brookings Institution, and they all agreed on the impending budgetary nightmare.
Yeah, Walker has been quite outspoken. He's been saying, you know, we're heading for a cliff, and Bush has not just taken off the brakes. He's pulled the brake handle out and thrown it out the window.
Yeah, it's staggering. He says that the U.S. debt and obligations are at $45 trillion, or $150,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. He said that by the year 2040, we wouldn't be able to do anything but pay interest on the massive federal debt.
Yeah, and George Bush says that his job as president is to not leave problems for future generations.
I wish I was in the White House press room. I have a question for the president. I want to say, Mr. President, the U.S. Comptroller General says that by the year 2040, we will barely be able to pay the interest on the debt and nothing else. Doesn't this make your plan for Social Security reform an exercise in futility?
Or a joke? I mean, you know, Social Security is not going to face a problem for 40 years. And if the economy grows at the same rate it has for the last 50 years, it will never face a problem. The only way it faces a problem is if we continue with the Bush recession for the next 40 years.
If what Walker is saying is true, then it doesn't matter. It's a moot point.
No, the whole government will melt down.
We're going over a cliff.
That's right. The whole government will melt down as a result of the Bush tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Absolutely right. Alan, we've got serious problems here, and they're problems that have been caused in the last 4 years by the insanity of these cons. Absolute fiscal insanity. 29 minutes past the hour. Thanks for calling, Alan.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. You're in the real free speech zone. The one that doesn't require you to stand in a cage made of barbed wire like the ones around the Bush events. That doesn't have guards with guns like the Bush events, the Republican events. Bush coming to Grand Rapids this weekend should be entertaining. Calvin College going, well, you know, we're not really sure that this is what Christianity's all about, you know. Stick it to the poor and give it to the rich. Can't find that in the Bible. I'm sorry. It's not even in the Old Testament. I can't find it. Other than that, that's what the bad guys were doing. I mean, you know, kind of that was the Pharaoh's gig. Nebuchadnezzar was into that. But anyway, legislation. This falls into the category of where are they when you need them? That being the anti-abortion folks. And I think it just serves to highlight the hypocrisy of what's going on here, that it's really about, that the movement is really about men controlling women, about patriarchy, rather than about promoting a culture of life. A phrase that Pope John Paul II came up with, that George Bush has appropriated and will shamelessly use, mark my words, will shamelessly use. As the not just Bush Jr., but you know the Republican Party will use in the 2006 and 2008 elections. But here, this is a story from Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama. A teenage girl was pregnant. She was a senior. Rather than dropping out of school and rather than having an abortion, she decided to continue with her studies and get her diploma and graduate. The school told her, we don't want any pregnant girls walking on stage. Now, her boyfriend, everybody knew who the father of the child was. She acknowledged it. He acknowledged it. The boyfriend, the child's father, no problem. He can walk on stage and get his diploma, but she can't. Where's Randall Terry protesting this outrage? Well, you know, you can't raise money for this. This is just, you know. This isn't a photo op or something. So anyhow, she walked across the stage. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. She walked across the stage after everybody's name had been called and they'd come up and gotten their diplomas. And she gets up on stage and she walks over to the podium and she says her own name. She calls herself up. And there was no diploma there for her, so she just says her own name and says, you know, I've graduated, or thank you, or whatever she says. And they call the police. They call the police. This was at the St. Jude Educational Institute, a high school in Montgomery, Alabama. They call the police. Her mother and aunt were escorted out by police after she headed back to her seat. Her mother, Sheila Cosby, says, I can't believe something like this is happening in 2005. My daughter has been through a lot, and I am proud of her. She deserved to walk, and she did, by walking a walk up there and get her diploma. And the daughter says, Alicia Cosby, she says, I worked hard throughout high school and I wanted to walk with my class. The father of Cosby's child, also a senior at the school, was allowed to participate in the graduation. Our Con Hypocrisy Award of the Year, I think, goes to those folks. Speaking of con hypocrites, you know, one of the largest industries in the United States, the industry that has driven probably the majority of innovation on the Internet, the industry that provides for a significant portion of the profit margins of most of the large hotel chains. In fact, several of the large hotel chains would show no profit whatsoever without this industry. The industry which also provides for the profit margin for satellite TV and cable TV around the United States, the pornography industry, a multi-billion dollar industry, is going Republican. Remember Mary Carey, the porn star who was going to run, who ran for governor against Arnold Schwarzenegger and Gray Davis and the whole bunch of them in the California election? Well, she has been invited by Karl Rove and George W. Bush to attend a two-day event at the National Republican Congressional Committee, along with her boss, President Mark Kulkus, president of Kick-Ass Pictures. They have been invited to have dinner with George W. Bush on June 14th in Washington, D.C. Kulkus was invited to attend the event by the Republican National Congressional Committee. This is an article by Chip Baker, AVN Online magazine. Invited to attend the event, by the RNCC, the Republican National Congressional Committee, which is organizing the event over a two-day course of RNCC events preceding the dinner, stripper carry, and pornography czar Kolkis will be attending a meeting with presidential advisor Karl Rove, offering their recommendations on important national issues. Kerry says, I'm hoping to run as Lieutenant Governor of California next year, and since Arnold Schwarzenegger is a Republican, I thought this dinner would be a great networking opportunity for me. Kolkis, her boss, the guy who runs the pornography studio, says, I'm honored to be invited to this event. Republicans bill themselves as the pro-business party. Well, you won't find a group of people more pro-business than pornographers. We contributed over $10 billion to the national economy last year, he says. Kerry adds, I'm especially looking forward to meeting Karl Rove. Smart men like him are so sexy. I know he's against gay marriage, but I think I can convince him that a little girl-on-girl action now and then isn't so bad. Kolkis, the pornographer, serves as an honorary chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee's Business Advisory Council, a group of business people who advocate a pro-business agenda. His company produces hardcore adult videos with the guarantee of no fake boobs and no condoms. Kerry ran for governor in 2003 in the California recall election. Kolkis served as her campaign manager. Cheap stunt? I don't know. $10 billion is a lot of money. I suspect that, Karl Rove is going, money. In the meantime, here we started out the hour talking about pensions changing hands and pension funds going down the tubes, going down in flames. The other side of the story, well, while elders are losing their pensions, literally millions of them, as a result of the mergers and acquisitions frenzy, which has wiped out small and medium-sized businesses across America, homogenized the landscape of America so that every city in the country looks like every other city. I remember, 30 years ago, hitchhiking across the country as a teenager, and every city looked different. Every restaurant had its own local flavor and its own local name, and hotels had eccentric names, and stores were locally owned, and occasionally you'd see, something you'd recognize, a McDonald's or a Woolworths, but that was about it. Not anymore. Now, small businesses are no longer welcome in America, thank you very much. 25 years of conservative economics have run most of them out of business. And in the process, they've screwed all these pensioners. They've, no pun based on our last story there. All these pensioners are out in the cold, millions of them, as the Wall Street Journal documented yesterday, millions of them. But there is some good news for seniors, even though it required taking $1.1 billion away from the state Children's Health Insurance Program, the SCHIP program, I guess some people call it, or it's the acronym. Even though it required removing $1.1 billion from that and causing 8.4 million children to lack health insurance, Congress has made sure that $2 billion will be available through Medicare over the next 10 years to pay for Viagra. Yep, $2 billion for Viagra. Now we can't insure those children, but Bob Dole and his friends, they are going to be well taken care of. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, by the way, the website if you want to drop into our live chat room. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey Tim, what's up?
Hi Tom. Thanks for the minimum daily requirement of sanity.
You're welcome. What's
I up? Heard your rant about the corruption on pensions, and I have a follow-up question. When workers resign or retire from their jobs, they often retain the 401k plan they have at the company.
Right.
Does it follow that 401k plans also are subject to this kind of corruption?
No. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think that because 401k plans are, well, now that I think of it, I recall seeing some stories about companies that were, but that was illegal, some companies that were messing with people's 401k plans. But it was a story about people being busted for it. 401k plans are really more like it's your money and your employer is contributing into it, but you have some say in how it's used and where it's invested. The problem with 401ks, the big problem with 401ks, is companies encouraging their employees to invest their 401k in the company's own stock. And what that does, when you get enough employees, you get a large company, and a lot of the employees are buying the stock, it drives up demand for the stock. You drive up demand for the stock, it drives up the price of the stock. Then you got the senior executives. Part of their compensation is based on having stock options, which means that they can buy, they get a million stock options in 2002. And what that means is that in 2005, and let's say the stock price in 2002 is $80 a share. And let's say in 2005 the stock price is $90 a share, like it's Halliburton, like it's gone up in value because they got a government contract. Okay, it's gone up $10 a share. If you have a stock option from 2002, you don't have to actually buy that stock in 2002. You simply have the option. 3 years later, you can buy that stock at the 2002 price, even though the price now in 2005 is $10 higher. So that means you buy $1 million worth of stock, and now it's worth, you know, or say $10 million worth of stock, it's now worth $11 million. So you exercise your option, you buy the stock, and the next day you sell the stock, and you make $1 million cash, bang, just like that, that fast. So senior executives are compensated in this way with stock options so that they can play the game and they can make, you know, good, quick, fast bucks. On the other hand, so what they want to do is inflate their stock prices. So on the other hand, you've got these same senior executives saying to people with their 401ks, their retirement funds, please put your retirement fund in our company's stock because that's going to drive up the stock prices so that the senior executives can make more money. That's the 401k scam. That's what happened to the Enron folks, for example.
Yeah. Do you think that a similar kind of thing could happen also in employee stock ownership plans?
Yeah, ESOPs. Again, it's not that different. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's not that different from investing in your, you know, putting your 401k money into your own company's stock. I mean, there, if you've got a company where the executives are manipulating the stock, you got a problem.
Right.
If you're in an ESOP and the company is corrupt, as, you know, as happens with big companies, I mean, welcome to the wonderful world here, you're at some risk. On the other hand, I think broadly ESOPs are a good thing. I think that the more worker ownership of a company you can get, the better. But, you know, it really only starts to make sense when it tips the balance, when you have enough employee ownership that the employees actually have a strong voice on the board.
Yeah, I was in an ESOP several years ago, and we had absolutely no voice, zero.
Right, and those are kind of sop ESOPs, you know, tossing a bone to the dog sort of ESOPs, and so it's not quite as useful. Tim, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Kodak in North Carolina on the line. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, haven't heard from you in a while. Great to hear from you.
Yes, I'm still a listener every day. Hearing that story about the pornography industry being invited to the White House, I'm wondering, is Karl Rove taking a page from Tom DeLay, or Tom DeLay took a page from Karl Rove and Jack Abramoff? Is this going to be a shakedown where they say they're going to get the Christian right to shut the pornography industry down if they don't contribute some money to the Republican Party?
Oh, that's an interesting thought. Frankly, I kind of doubt it. These guys are really good at compartmentalizing. You know, they kind of separate
right.
This stuff. They talk to the Christian right on the one hand, and then they go talk to the pornography industry the next day. It's like Fox News. You've got Fox News complaining about you know the horrible sex and violence that's on television, and Fox News then has their sister channel, Fox Entertainment, providing horrible sex and violence on television.
Right.
Right? And so it's like you're going, wait, what's going on? You know, dissonance alert. But, you know, it makes some money. So, you know, what can you say?
Right. My other question was regarding, it's been a lot of conversation about Democrats not having a message or not being focused on any one issue. And it seems that today our biggest issue is the conglomeration of the media and its total taking over of the message. Why don't people just start using the L word? I mean, not liberal. I'm talking about the lies. We actually have the proof in the Downing Street memo, I think it was called.
Yeah.
Our president has lied. And that the L word gets the attention of the media, and at least it would bring the topic out of the closet.
Well, the problem, Kodak, is that the talking heads that you see on television, you are hearing about this on radio, but the talking heads that you see on television, if you get on TV, you know, the John King level, at the Wolf Blitzer level, your salary is somewhere between $500,000 and $5 million a year. I mean, these guys are making big bucks. And they know that their job depends on their being able to get the White House to answer their questions and return their phone calls. And the White House has said to them, in no uncertain terms, if you report, you know, negatively on us, we will cut off access to you. And that's what's going on. Frankly, I don't think it has to do with the fact that NBC owns GE owns NBC so much as it has to do with the fact that we have a star-driven culture in the media, and these guys are afraid of losing their jobs because they're afraid of losing access. If John King was to say something about George Bush that really slammed him, Bush would simply never talk to him again. John King would lose his job. That's, in my opinion, what's going on. Kodak, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Day after day, I'm more confused. But I look for the light through the pouring rain.
The pouring rain of the Bush administration. I'll tell you what, welcome back, friends. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. And let's see here, Ed in San Juan Capistrano, California on the line. Hey, Ed.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, do you think that Jeff, this is not what I called for, but that Jeff Gannon Gukert will film that meeting?
You know, he was at the most recent, at the Tom DeLay fundraiser, he was there.
Yeah, but this one he could bring his camera.
Yeah, there you go.
We can get a good story. Hey, yeah. The question is, you see, I'm diabetic, and that's why I'm losing my sight, you see?
Ouch.
But they have a new medicine out on the market, and it costs too much for what I'm making. I can't afford it. The doctor told me to go to Canada, but they don't have it there yet. So my problem is it's not just kids they've taken this away from. They've taken also the medication won't be paid for.
Yeah.
And I can't get any help with it, but Tom, I can get help with my Viagra.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the thing.
Isn't
the Viagra lobby
see,
is huge.
I can lose my sight, but I walk around and I have to worry about everything that's 4 hours.
Yeah. Ed, do you know about bitter melon, by the way?
Yeah. I've taken a lot of herbs. My son is definitely into herbs, and he's helped me quite a bit.
Okay.
But it just got so bad that, you know, the hemorrhaging in the eyes and the stuff that I needed medications to do it. But
yeah.
the new
well, I'm really
one
sorry
that
to hear that.
I can't get to use is I can get Viagra, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
and my wife but my wife can't get birth control pills.
That's right. How sick is this system? How sick is this system? Ed, thanks for the call, and I think it's, you know.
I just wanted to let you know, it's something that, you know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it's worse than ridiculous. It's criminal. It is criminal that we have a government that will not acknowledge that it is a basic human right to have health care. Every other country in the world acknowledges this.
I'm going to my grave, criminal. Tom, but I'm going to my grave with a smile on.
Okay. Well, good on you. Good on you, Ed. Good luck and God bless you. I hope you get through this. This is a tough one, a real tough one. Welcome to Bush World. Schumer and Frist coming up in the next hour of our program, and I want to get to China and the yuan and the general insanity of trade policy and how it's affecting people in states like Oregon and Michigan and California and Colorado and all around the country. Lots of other news. Andy Borowitz, Star Wars knowledge, U.S. students leading the planet. Much more coming up. Tom Hartman here with you. And the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Just reading a letter from Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon, the so-called moderate Republican. Under the Constitution of the United States, the President nominates and appoints Supreme Court judges and justices to the 9 federal court systems. The Senate, however, must confirm the President's nominees by a majority vote. Recently, critical judicial seats across the country have remained vacant due to the delaying tactics of some senators. So he's mimicking the Reich wing talking points. He's gonna vote to blow this thing up, Senator Gordon Smith. So those of you listening from Oregon, you can call Senator Smith at 1-877-SOB-USOB and let him know what you think of him and blowing up the Senate rules. 1-866, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan with us. Hey, Rick.
How are you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I heard you talking about the young lady, what was her name, Mary Carey?
Yeah.
And the foreign industry and so forth. And, of course, that shouldn't be too surprising. I have heard that, I haven't heard her say it herself, but Britney Spears, and admittedly she's not a porn star. I have nothing against her. And now Bo Derek's another one that's come on shows. And
yeah, they're Republicans.
She's a Republican, and I've seen...
In fact, there's this funny email floating around that one of the folks here at the radio station that I'm broadcasting from, there's some progressives and some Democrats and some Republicans and some conservatives here, as in any office, I suppose.
Oh, sure.
And one of the conservative executives sent an email to one of the progressive executives who shared it with me that was apparently is floating around in the right-wing email circuit. And it says their side, our side. And the their side had pictures of Bo Derek and Britney Spears and Ann Coulter and Laura Ingram. And then the their side, which is, you and my side, but they call it their side. And they had like Bella Abzug, and the worst imaginable picture that you could find of a bunch of women, in their later years.
Well, let's not forget Jane Fonda and Barbarella.
Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
Hot.
Well, she was then, and she's still
not
looks,
bad now for
she's
a 68-year-old woman.
I was going to say she still looks pretty good, but
I would be ashamed to be seen with her.
Yeah, no, but she's not Britney Spears in the mind of
no.
the conservatives. So,
but isn't it interesting though that?
What a sexist conversation for us to be having, Rick.
Well, no, it's not really sexist. What it points out is not all of
culturist.
A sudden, not all of a sudden the right wing can use sex as a selling point. They can trot out the mini-skirted babes, and,
yeah. During the 60s, it was the anti-war movement who had all the cute hippies,
Let's face it, you're going to find attractive and unattractive people of both sexes in all political
camps.
But I guess my point that his call was is that, we see how the Republican Party will at some point pander to the Christian right, to the NRA types, but their real constituency is Wall Street, and of course they don't like high taxes, and what they try to do, of course, because nobody likes high taxes, and so what you do is you promote this cutting taxes agenda, which benefits the very wealthy primarily, and then you give a little tax cut to the middle class and maybe even the poor, and they'll say, well, gee, everybody got a tax cut, it wasn't just the rich. Well, that's true, but of course the rich will get more of a tax cut because admittedly they do make more money, but the real problem is tax cuts are fine in a vacuum, but if in doing so you bankrupt the country, that's not such a good idea, is it?
No, it's not. And that's exactly what George W. is doing, is he's bankrupting the country with these phony tax cuts. And beyond that, I mean, consider this. If you have people who are working for a living and they're in the middle class, and let's say that they are actually paying, a third of their income in taxes, in income taxes, and then you have millionaires and billionaires, and let's say that they're paying a third of their income in taxes. If you were to eliminate the taxes altogether, if all the taxes simply went away, now the millionaires and billionaires are going to have a third more money because their money is coming from investments. Their money is coming from, the ownership of stocks and bonds and CEO salaries and things like that. But the average working people, what's going to happen to them? Are they going to suddenly make a third more money? Do you think that General Motors is going to say, gee, you don't have to pay income taxes anymore? You did have a job that was paying $30,000 a year, but or let's say you had a job that was paying $40,000 a year, and you only got $30,000 because of taxes, and now there's no tax. So now you're going to get a $40,000 paycheck. Do you really think that General Motors is going to do that? Or are they going to say, you know, we already know these people will work for $30,000 a year net after everything is said and done. So if the taxes go away, then we'll just reduce their pay. Because we know how much they'll work for. They'll work for $30,000 after taxes. Well, if there's no taxes, they'll still work for $30,000 or whatever, you know, fill in the blank with a number. So the reality is that, you know, the right wing goes out there and they sell tax cuts to the middle class, and people are thinking, oh, gee, tax cuts, that means I'll have more money. No, what it means is that the corporations can slow the rate at which they have to raise income to match inflation because, you know, part of the inflation bite is being taken out. And if it was a real tax cut, I mean, if you had a, you know, if you went with, you know, like the flat tax or something, everybody pays 10%. Then what would happen is you'd just see pay scales being adjusted. The millionaires and billionaires would make out like bandits, but you know, people earning anything from $10,000 to $200,000 or $300,000 a year, you know, anywhere in that category, they're out in the cold. Sorry, Charlie. So anyhow, Rick, thanks for calling. Thanks for listening to WTKG. I appreciate it. George in Coos Bay listening on KBBR. Hey, George, what's up?
Hello, Tom.
Well, thanks. George, your phone is fading out badly. That's a cell phone there in Oregon?
No, it is an Airphone, however.
Ah, okay.
So let me get a little closer.
There you go.
My wife and I did escape Governor Gropenfuhrer about 7 months ago.
Oh, and you moved up here to Oregon?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to...
we're both carpetbaggers.
I wanted to talk to you about what Gordon Smith was saying on C-SPAN earlier this morning.
I didn't catch it. What did he say?
Among other things, he was rewriting history, as far as I can tell, saying that this 60-vote majority is some sort of new thing, some sort of gentleman's agreement, and that by requiring a 60-vote majority, they're rewriting the Constitution themselves.
Yeah, well, the Republicans are really going to the mat on this thing. I've got the list, the top 10 filibuster falsehoods that we're going to get into in the program here.
Oh,
the
10
lies that the Republicans are putting out.
That's great. This is straight out of Joseph Goebbels' playbook.
Oh, it is.
They keep telling the same lie over and over again. And
people will believe it. And the more
yeah.
outrageous it is, the more likely they are to believe it if it's repeated sufficiently.
Yeah.
And
I'm
that's what's
starting
going
to
on.
Think C-SPAN ought to be on radio or something like that so that more people can... listen to it.
Yeah, well, it is on satellite radio, but there's, you know, the commercial stations haven't, you know, nobody's figured out a way to make a buck at it. So
every time I hear Mitch McConnell blather on about the fine qualifications of Priscilla Owens and Janice Rogers
Brown
yeah. in any case, you know, who was, I think it was you were pointing out that most of the Supreme Court justices of the seven, there's about six that are Republicans, and she's voted against their vote on numerous occasions.
She is so extreme. Well, both Owen and Brown are so extreme that 30 years ago they wouldn't have fit in the Republican Party. They would have been considered, you know, members of the John Birch Society.
Well, they wouldn't have fit because of their skin color. This is
well,
like,
Priscilla Owen is white. Janice Rogers Brown.
Janice Rogers Brown. Reminds me of Clarence Thomas, somebody who benefited from, you know, social programs, and then cuts, you know, he chops down the bridge for others of his people.
Yeah, although, you know, I'm not going to say that just because somebody is black that they should therefore support, you know, affirmative action or not. I mean, I don't think that we need to put a litmus test on, and there's the liberal in me, right? I don't think
no.
that we need to put a litmus test on this. And I'm not, you know, one to call people Oreos or whatever. I think that the larger issue is the fact that Janice Rogers Brown, the thing that really upsets me about Janice Rogers Brown, is that she's the one who said that 1937 was our socialist revolution.
Oh, yeah.
She's the one who would roll back Social Security, who would declare Social Security unconstitutional, who would declare unemployment insurance unconstitutional, who would who would declare any kind of programs where the government is stimulating the economy by being the employer of last resort as unconstitutional, who would declare minimum wage laws unconstitutional, who would declare worker protection laws unconstitutional.
Sure.
You know, she's the one who is hell-bent for leather to roll back the New Deal, and she's the one that I think that they really want to get on the Supreme Court. And for that reason, because that's what these guys are all about. What they're really all about is rolling back the New Deal.
Yeah, and probably environmental protections too, which was a lot of which were signed into law by Richard Nixon. Now there was a real left-wing commie, wasn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So they're going against not only, you know, mainstream values, but even good solid Republican values. Barry Goldwater is probably spinning in his grave right now.
Well, and even Richard Nixon, who signed the Environmental Protection Act. I mean, here's Rush Limbaugh laying out in a moment of candor, laying out what's really going on. And I'll just play it without comment.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
There you go.
That pretty well says it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I need not even spin that. It is simply self-evident. Every now and then you get a moment of honesty. George, thanks a lot.
And not to play the race card, but she is advertising herself as the daughter of sharecroppers.
Yeah, no, so, she's playing the race card. I'm not going to go there, but, I got it. George, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much.
Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Bill in Vancouver, Washington on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Good, good.
Hey, I called at 877-762-8762 number.
Right.
To find out, how the state senator is going to be voting. And what they told me was that...
That wouldn't be the state senate. That's the United States Senate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what they said was, in terms of on the filibuster issue,
mm-hmm.
they said that the filibuster is going to be determined by those people who are on the committee. Is that true?
Who did you talk to?
This is Senator Cantwell's office.
Okay, so you're senator from Washington State.
Right, she gave me an impression of the fact that regardless, I tried to find out which way was she leaning or not. She said, well, the vote is not really dependent upon all the senators. It's going to be based upon the committee members.
Boy, that's a new one to me. Is she a Republican or a Democrat?
No, I didn't ask.
Yeah, you're not sure.
That's surprising because I thought that we can like pressure the senators as those who are going to throw it out and at least find out where they stand.
Yeah.
And it's like a smokescreen. I'm saying, wait a minute.
These guys are tossing up new stuff every 5 minutes. They've got some new thing to try and confuse the American people and obfuscate this issue. The bottom line is that it takes a two-thirds vote. It takes a two-thirds majority vote of the Senate to change the rules. But it only takes a simple majority, 51 votes or 50 votes minus 40, against 49, simple majority to suspend the rules.
Does that be decided by the committee members?
No, it's not decided. I mean, it might be decided by the committee, but it still has to be voted on by the Senate. And so, the committee thing, that's a new one on me, Bill. I don't know.
Check it out for me, please.
Yeah, yeah, maybe somebody will call. Who knows? We'll ask the folks in our chat room, and I'll look around. We'll let you know. 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Speaking of too much monkey business, let's get our report for the day from Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. What are they up to on Capitol Hill there, Ellen?
Well, they are talking about the filibuster. In fact, there was a press conference this morning from the leaders of the Congressional Caucus, and they basically called on Majority Leader Frist to stop using the nuclear option. Ellen Holmes Norton talked about the fact that it was used against African Americans for 100 years, she said. But she said that it, in fact, was still very important for preserving minority rights, even though it had been used against African Americans. Now, it's also interesting that Harry Reid this morning, he is the Senate Minority Leader, and he said that he has four Republicans that are secretly more than willing to go with them, and they're not even releasing what names they are.
But he needs six.
Well, he needs six. He's aware of that. And the fact is that there are, of course, some wavering Republicans, which is why they are doing these radio rows next week.
Interesting. Interesting. And we're going to be doing a radio row in 2 weeks, right?
We'll be doing a radio row in 2 weeks, and I know that we'll be feeding you some guests for you from the Democratic radio row next week. I don't think you want the Republican ones. I'm sure you would, but they are insistent, of course, that they want to be in friendly territory.
That's a shame, because I would much rather have the Republicans than the Democrats. I love chewing them up and spitting them out, or having reasonable conversations with them. Excuse me.
They know that, and that's why they're not willing to do that.
That's unfortunate. So what else is going on in Washington, D.C.?
Well, as you know, this afternoon, actually, well, two things. This afternoon, they're going to be having some hearings on gay marriage again in the Senate. And as we talked earlier, you know, whenever the rough gets going, they bring out the gay marriage issue.
Yeah. Yeah. So whenever they want to avoid talking about the fact that conservative economics are destroying the economy, that George Bush's plan to get himself to get Republicans elected in 2002 and himself reelected in 2004, also known as the war in Iraq, is turning into a disaster and a morass. Whenever they want to distract us from the destruction of our environment, bash the gays.
You got it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the modern version of the flag burning amendment.
Just in case you thought Senator Clinton was only going to run for Senator of New York, roll call this morning is pointing out that there's a group of Iowans who are coming to her home for a fundraiser, and that she is expected, of course, to talk about her Senate campaign, but she's also expected to talk about the Iowa caucuses.
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
I am shocked.
I know.
I'm just shocked.
But, I mean, the word in the Clinton camp is, oh, she's only focusing on her Senate race.
Yeah.
Right now.
You know, I made this prediction to Louise the other day, and I may live to regret it, but I predicted that in 2006 Hillary Clinton will be elected president of the United States. And I'm frankly not sure how I feel about that. I just have to say.
In 2006, you mean in 2008?
2008, yeah, pardon me. Yeah, in 2008.
I will go with the exact same prediction.
Yeah, yeah. It's that she not only will she run, but she'll win because the Republicans are committing Harry Caray. I mean, they're destroying their own party. They're destroying themselves.
But you know, don't forget. I mean, it really depends on how she is perceived in the hinterland.
Yeah, well, that's why she's having joint press conferences with Newt Gingrich right now.
That's right.
You know, it's all about reinventing Hillary. And as I said, I mean, any Democrat is better than any Republican in my mind right now. And I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm not willing to go after her yet, but I'm certainly not willing to endorse her yet. So anyhow, Ellen, thanks so much.
It's going to be a long road.
Yeah, it is. Ellen, can you hold the line for just a second?
Sure.
Okay, stick around. I'll be right with you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're listening to the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. What a shocking idea. 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We have a guest we're going to get to in just a second. First, Tomas in Grand Rapids, listening on WTKG, has been patiently sitting on hold. Hey, Tomas, what's up?
Outstanding show. Listen, I feel very strongly about the free trade of the Americas. I'm against that.
Captain,
and I know
yeah.
there's a lot of that a lot of Democrats are against that, too. I think it would be a smart idea for the Democrats to say they're going to filibuster that and get Republicans to join them. That would then show people the benefits of having a filibuster, because realistically, the majority of America does not know the danger they are in with this thing when it goes down.
I agree with you, Tomas. And you know what boggles my mind is that what the Democrats are threatening the Republicans with, if the Republicans detonate the nuclear option, is that they are then going to start talking about the issues that America cares about. They're going to start on the floor of the Senate. They're going to start talking about worker rights. They're going to talk about unionization. They're going to talk about revisiting Taft-Hartley. They're going to talk about environmental rights. They're going to talk about whether or not, you know, the Clean Skies Initiative, the Healthy Forest Initiative. They're going to talk about whether the economy is melting down. They're going to talk about, you know, George W. Bush throwing us into so much debt that by 2040 we'll be paying 100% of our taxes. We'll just be going to interest on the national. They're going to start talking about that. And I'm saying, why don't you talk about that right now? So, anyway, Tomas, good point. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
all right,
it. Thanks for listening. It's amazing. Well, you know, once a week we get into topics a little deeper than normal and talk about the things you didn't know that you didn't know. You didn't know you needed to know. Maybe you didn't know that you didn't know that you didn't know. And perhaps you do need to know. Sometimes what you don't know is wrong. And sometimes even maybe everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be, Robbie? Ravi Batra is with us, and Ravi, you wrote a book a couple of years ago. Wasn't it The Crash of 2000 or something like that?
Yes.
I read that book. In fact, I own that book. I thought it was great. Your timing was obviously a little bit off, but the fundamentals that you were identifying in that book I thought were quite solid. Are you still on that, you know, still singing from that sheet?
Well, many things that I wrote in that book have come out to be true now. I mean, the crash did occur from 2000 to 2002, the stock market crashed. I mean, you know what the NASDAQ market did.
Yeah.
Fell more than 75%. But the new book that I have written does not deal much with the crash aspect. It just tells us what's wrong with our economy today and who's responsible for it.
Yes, and in fact, the title of your new book is called
Greenspan's Fraud.
And what is Greenspan's fraud?
Well, Greenspan, I think, has committed a lot of follies and a lot of frauds. And the two that immediately come to mind, one is what I call it the Social Security fraud. Now, the Social Security fraud is this. Most people think, and almost everybody thinks, that the payroll taxes were raised sharply in 1983 to fix Social Security.
Right.
But in reality, they were raised to fix the budget deficit. That was the main and perhaps the only purpose of the payroll tax rise in 1983.
You mean they raised Social Security taxes so that they could borrow that money and shift it into the general fund so that they could continue operating government?
They could continue to operate government and at the same time continue to reduce the income tax for the wealthy people. And so that was a sole purpose. I think that's what my interpretation is from the actions and speeches and words of Greenspan and some other politicians. But Greenspan was the ringleader in all this. He was the chairman of the commission which proposed the big rise in the payroll tax on the pretext that we needed to create a surplus in the trust fund and then that surplus would meet the retirement needs of the baby boomers in the future, but since the purpose of that tax was to meet the government's expenses, we have really no cash in that trust fund, and we should not be surprised because it serves a very purpose, and that's what I call it fraud, because they sold the plan to the public as Social Security reform while they raised the funds to meet government's expenses.
Well, it was really just a tax increase on the one hand on working people, because at that time Social Security was capped at around 50,000, wasn't it?
Oh, less than that, at 30,000, and the tax was lower.
Right. So
in fact, the self-employment tax, the maximum I think at that time was around 10%.
Right.
And now it's 15.2% when we look at all the taxes combined on self-employment.
Right.
So,
yeah, I know, I pay it. And so the situation that you have is that back in the 80s, Reagan pushed through these income taxes on millionaires and billionaires, income tax reductions, and he had to make up that revenue some way, or else the government would go into a tailspin that it couldn't recover from. And so the way he made up that revenue was by raising taxes on working people, but he couldn't simply say, okay, we're going to raise the income taxes on working people and lower the income taxes on the rich. So he got to say, we're lowering the income tax on everybody, but by the way, we've got to fix Social Security, so we're raising that tax. Am I getting this right?
You got it exactly right, and I have a lot of evidence supporting this premise. I have words from Greenspan. In fact, later on, Senator Moynihan was so concerned. He said, "This is fraud. Now we are spending the Social Security surplus. There is no surplus, and so this is fraud. So let's repeal this tax now because no surplus is being created." So he wanted to repeal just a small part of the tax rise in 1983, that occurred in 1983. He introduced that bill in 1990 to repeal a part of the tax rise. Greenspan said no.
Hmm.
So now you can see, what was the purpose of the tax then?
Yeah.
Greenspan said no. And so he has been...
So when Bush said that these IOUs were worthless, and he was talking about Treasury bills, he was actually stating a neoconservative truth of some sort, a bizarre...
He was stating the truth, but he forgot to tell that who is responsible for these worthless IOUs.
Yeah, this is Republican economics run amok.
Exactly.
This is voodoo economics.
Right.
So Reagan sold us down the river to help out his rich buddies to create greater wealth at the top, greater poverty at the bottom, and wipe out the American middle class. Declared war on the working people. It was certainly war on organized labor. We've seen unionization in the United States go from 25% when Reagan came into office to, in the private sector now, around 8%. They have been successful in this part of their agenda, but the cost to the nation has been that they have bankrupted us.
Well, these are very strong words, but unfortunately they are true.
So what is our fate here, Ravi Batra, the author of Greenspan's Fraud?
Right. So the book is larger than just Greenspan's Fraud. It also looks at... his views and what they have done to the American economy. For instance, right now, 36 million people live below poverty line. 36 million people. 45 million people have no insurance. And then you have record bankruptcies. But the worst thing is that we have this trade deficit, which is right now more than $2 billion per day.
Right, where we're borrowing money from the rest of the world, and then they take, we buy surplus stuff, we buy stuff from the rest of the world, we give them our money, and then they take that money and they come over here and they buy up our companies, and then we get to work for them, but they take the profit back to their country.
Right, and people think that this is okay as long as the rest of the world wants to do it, but it's not okay, even then it's not okay. Why? Because it is destroying our manufacturing base.
Yes.
And once your manufacturing base is destroyed, you can never recover from the trade deficit, because what are we going to export? Even if the dollar goes down sharply, they're talking about raising the value of the yuan and the Japanese yen, the Chinese currency, and so on. But even if that does happen, after a lot of political pressure, what are we going to export?
Well, we've already made that transition. When Reagan came into office, we exported more goods than any other nation on earth, more finished manufactured goods, and we imported primarily raw materials. We now import more finished goods than any other nation in the world, and we export more raw materials. We have become a banana republic.
Exactly, and so this is not benign. This is not okay that the world.
No, this is cancer.
Keeps borrowing, keeps sending us money. We are destroying our manufacturing base and high-paying manufacturing jobs. The new jobs that are being created are in service areas, and they pay much less. So the real wages are falling, and that's the legacy, the true legacy of Greenspan. And so Greenspan's fraud is not just that Social Security fraud and then constant flip-flops.
Yeah.
I call this the intellectual fraud.
Sure.
Look at this. When Carter was president, Greenspan opposed a cut in the income tax. Under Reagan, he supported the cut in the income tax. Under Clinton, he opposed the cut in the income tax. under Bush now, he supported the cut in the income tax again. So he,
why?
To stay, to come to power to begin with, and then stay as Fed chairman as long as possible.
I see. So he's just playing both ends against the middle. Let me just play you about, we have about 5 minutes left to have this conversation. Let me play you a minute and a half or 2 minutes of Bernie Sanders giving it to Alan Greenspan, and then I want to get your take on what you think of what Congressman Sanders. Well, here, for our listeners, this is Bernie Sanders talking to Alan Greenspan.
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world. And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving.
He goes on and on, and then he gives Greenspan an opportunity to respond.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia, and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms
for
of education, health care, and decent-paying jobs. Wrong, Mr.
May
Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you. For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size. Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes, the purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce.
So that's Alan Greenspan responding to Bernie Sanders. Ravi Batra, the author of Greenspan's Fraud, your take on this, Ravi?
Well, I have shown in several chapters that all of Greenspan's theories are totally wrong, and because they are not supported by history at all. First of all, our living standard has been coming down for the vast majority of people. Yeah, for the top 20%, 30% people, the living standard is rising, but for the other 70%, the purchasing power of their wages has been falling. And then I agree with everything that Bernard Sanders said, except one thing. He said to Mr. Greenspan that you are an honest person. I don't believe he's honest. He's a fraud, and that's what I've proved in this book, Greenspan's Fraud, that he has been constantly lowering the living standards of the poor and protecting the profits of speculators, big firms, Wall Street. Why? Because Wall Street was a key to his reappointment again and again. When Wall Street was in his favor, when Wall Street was with him, he opposed the presidents at that time. For instance, he did not help the election of George Bush Sr. because Wall Street was with him and he took care of Wall Street. Once Wall Street turned against him after the stock market crash of 2000, then he went back into the president's corner, George Bush Jr. He's always looking after his own reappointment.
Yeah, be careful of calling George Bush Jr., by the way. The phrase Jr. because he so hates his father. And if anybody in his presence refers to him as Jr., they're banished forever.
What do I say? The George H. Bush?
Well,
George
no.
Bush?
This is the reason why I call him Jr.
No, George W. Bush Jr. Yeah. I mean, I I have nothing personal against Greenspan or even the president. I'm just looking at their policies and what they're doing.
Yeah, you're just an economist, right?
I'm just an economist. I'm not a politician.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at what they're doing and how it's creating hardship for the people in general. And so, now, for instance,
well, Ravi, we're out of time here. But okay. Is there a website where people can get more information about your book?
This book is everywhere. It's on all bookstores.
Okay. Who's the publisher of this book?
Palgrave Macmillan.
Okay, great. Yeah. And so you can find it in your bookstores. Greenspan's fraud. I just discovered we have 30 more seconds. If you wanted to make one other point there.
The other point I wanted to say was Greenspan would like to abolish the minimum wage because, according to him, it creates unemployment. I have shown in the book. Minimum wage went up 17 times in the history of the nation every time employment went up.
Employment go up, but inflation went down in the years following the increase in the minimum wage.
Yeah,
I have that graph.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
He's just lying. He's just a fraud.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Greenspan's fraud. I've got to get this book. This is great. Ravi Batra, the author of 6 international bestsellers, 2 of which were New York Times bestsellers, and I certainly hope this one hits the New York Times bestseller list as well. Ravi, thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks for calling.
I do appreciate it, and good luck with your book there. It's okay. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some cranky right-wing think tank or the RNC. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
Find the cost of freedom buried in the ground.
Tom Hartman here with you.
Mother Earth will swallow you. Lay your body.
That's rather depressing. This is what happens when you don't know the bumper music before you play it. Welcome back to the show. 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jason in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Yeah, hey. Just a couple of quick points. I'm going to try and squeeze all this in real quick. First of all, the issue of the Janice Rogers Brown and the other senator or the other judge, basically, it's not even about their faith, but rather about controlling the judgeships and the issues.
It's got nothing to do with their faith. It has to do with a pro corporate agenda, an anti consumer agenda, and it has to do with absolute power. It has to do with the Stalinization of the United States government, single party rule. That's what it's about.
Because if it depended on faith, then they wouldn't even get in because of the separation that is supposed to exist in government between the judiciary, the executive, the legislative, and the church.
Well, and the fact of the matter is that
be in there at all.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is that most of these candidates have not they're not outspoken religious people. Yeah, and in fact, the Republicans have put up 258 candidates. 268 candidates and 258 of them have been confirmed. 10 have not been confirmed and judicial nominees. And many of them have been outspokenly, you know, hey, I'm Jewish, I'm Christian, I'm, you know, I'm Catholic, I'm whatever. They have been, quote, people of faith. And that's got nothing to do with it. It's a smokescreen. It's nonsense.
Right. And then secondly, just so that people, Republicans, really kind of get an idea of what they've done, you know, they really should be ashamed of themselves letting their party and the nation, you know, be taken, you know, totally off track, totally down a path that's going to be detrimental to this country for, like, decades to come. And then looking through the local paper, there's nothing in the paper, in the Grand Rapids Press, which is going to be ground zero for a Bush protest Saturday for Calvin College. There's nothing in the press about George Callaway and his remarks in Congress about our complicity in the oil for food scandal.
Surprise, surprise, Jason. Surprise,
no surprise.
Surprise. Yeah, no, I'm not, you know, it's a tragedy.
If you're aware of the politics here in Grand Rapids, no surprise at all.
No, well, it's not just Grand Rapids. I mean, the same thing here in Portland, Oregon, which is a very progressive town. It's the same thing. Of course, the local newspaper is owned by Newhouse. So, anyhow, Jason, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American FM, and in cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, toll-free, all across the United States, 1-866-889-8894. Outside the United States, you can call into our hotline here at 503-248-0620. And, of course, if you'd like to drop into the chat room or participate in our blog message board, go to tomhartman.com. Either click live chat or the blog/message board. Your choice. Although the live chat is actually full of folks right now having conversations, and interesting conversations in particular. I didn't realize that Ravi Batra had written a book about called The Myth of Free Trade, The Pouring of America. Benedict at Large sharing that with us. Some discussions about our guest in the last hour and the topic of the future of America. Speaking of the future of America, every now and then the curtain gets pulled back a little bit, and you get to see the man behind the curtain, as it were, to use the Wizard of Oz metaphor. And there are two curtain pullings that have been in the news this week that I think are worth sharing with you. The first, a librarian's brush with the FBI. This from USA Today, surprisingly, by Joan Arialdi. It was a moment that librarians had been dreading, writes Joan. On June 8, 2004, an FBI agent stopped at the Deming branch of the Whatcom County Library System in northeast Washington State and requested a list of the people who had borrowed a biography of Osama bin Laden. The librarian said no. We did not take this step lightly, he says. First, our attorney called the local FBI office and asked why the information was important. She was told that one of our patrons had sent the FBI the book after discovering these words written in the margin, quote, "If the things I'm doing is considered a crime, then let history be a witness that I'm a criminal. Hostility toward America's religious duty, and we hope to be rewarded by God," end quote. We told, now this, you know, again, the librarian, we told the FBI that it would have to follow legal channels before our Board of Trustees would address releasing the names of the borrowers. We also informed the FBI that through a Google search, our attorney had discovered that the words in the margin were almost identical to a statement by bin Laden in a 1998 interview. In other words, this is nothing new, and this wasn't some, you know, local loony threatening the president or something. This was simply, you know, a biography of bin Laden. Somebody had put a quote in there, written a quote into the margin, from bin Laden. Undeterred, the FBI served a subpoena on the library a week later demanding a list of everyone who had borrowed the book since November of 2001. So the trustees of the library then faced a, shall we say, difficult choice. Do you take on the FBI or not? She goes on to say, it is our job to protect the rights of people to obtain the books and other materials that they need to form and express ideas. If the government can easily obtain records of the books that our patrons are borrowing, they will not feel free to request the books they want. Who would check out a biography of bin Laden knowing that this might attract the attention of the FBI? It's interesting to know now what books it is, or what books, what at least a book, one of the books, that if you check it out of the library, the FBI will come knocking on the door to find out. You know what we should do? Everybody in America should go to their local public library and check out the biography of Bin Laden. Well, no. That's childish. Forget I said that. I am not in favor of scrambling the FBI's efforts. I want the FBI to be successful. What I'm opposed to, or what I'm in favor, let's say what I'm in favor of, is changing the USA Patriot Act so that our rights of privacy are once again restored. I believe that it's possible to live in a nation that is both safe and free. I know George Bush doesn't believe this. I know the cons don't believe this. I believe it. And I know that the majority of Americans believe it. And we have had that kind of a country before. And just because 9/11 happened, you know, so 19 guys with box cutters were able to hijack some airplanes. Hey, 20 years earlier, 20 years earlier, people in Congress were begging the airline industry. They tried to pass a law, got shot down by the lobbyists from the airline industry, begging the airline industry to harden the cockpit doors so planes couldn't be hijacked. This was when they were hijacking planes to Cuba in the 1960s and 70s. 20 years earlier, 30 years earlier, Congress was saying, why don't you just make it so that those doors to the cockpit can't be easily opened or kicked in? No, we can't do that, the airline industry said. That would cost a few million dollars. We got, you know, if our CEOs are going to make $5, $10, $15, $20 million a year, if we're going to protect their pensions no matter what, we can't afford to harden the cockpit doors. I mean, think about it for a minute. Where was the failure here? 9/11 didn't change everything, as Bush said. 9/11 was a significant event, a very significant event. It was a horrific crime. And the criminals need to be prosecuted. First, they have to be arrested. George Bush has been incompetent at doing that. In fact, he now says he doesn't give Bin Laden much thought anymore. I'm sure the families of the 9/11 victims are very comforted to hear that. But nonetheless, Bin Laden or not, we don't have to be a nation living in fear. We don't have to be terrorized by our own government. So back to Joan Eroldi's piece in USA Today. She said, it is for this reason that libraries across the country have taken a strong stand against government intrusion. In the 1980s, it was revealed that the FBI had engaged in a secret library awareness program to track the books borrowed by patrons who had emigrated from communist countries. Determined to prevent such activities in the future, librarians helped pass laws in 48 states that bar the surrender of customer information except in compliance with a subpoena. She says, for our trustees, this sense of responsibility to protect libraries as institutions where people are free to explore any idea ran up against their desire to help their government fight terrorism, but they were resolute and voted unanimously to go to court to quash the FBI subpoena. 15 days later, the FBI withdrew its request. However, she says, there is a shadow over our happy ending. Our experience taught us how easily the FBI could have discovered the names of the borrowers, how readily this could happen in any library in the USA. It also drove home for us the dangers of the USA Patriot Act to readers' privacy. She says, our government has always possessed the power to obtain library records, but that power has been subject to safeguards. And this is the thing. I am not saying... Nobody is saying, you know, Bob Barr, former Republican congressman, is not saying, who agrees with me on this. We are not saying that the FBI shouldn't be able to get the records of what library books somebody checked out. I'm not saying that. I think the FBI should be allowed to get the records of what books somebody has checked out of the library if there is evidence that that person has committed or is planning to commit a crime. And if you can demonstrate that evidence to a judge. This is the standard that is held in the Fourth Amendment of the United States. It is very simple. It is very straightforward. The Fourth Amendment, in its entirety, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, you have to demonstrate probable cause that there's a crime before you can go snooping on people if you're the government. The Constitution protects us from abuse by government. And the Patriot Act is a clear and present violation of the Constitution of the United States. And now we have cons not only saying they want the Patriot Act provisions renewed, they want to make that even more draconian. They want to take us closer to a Soviet-style form of government, where the news is not only controlled, but it's also manufactured, where people are not only afraid to speak out against the government, you know, for fear of censure, they're afraid to speak out against the government for fear of vanishing. We have a government that says that it's possible that American citizens have been put in concentration camps in Guantanamo Bay, in addition to the two that we know have vanished, the two American citizens that were vanished, that there may be others, but they don't have to tell us. They don't have to tell us. And not to mention the people who are not American citizens. The Constitution doesn't say American citizens have these rights. It says all persons have these rights. Now, certainly, if somebody is here illegally, they've broken the law, you arrest them, you deport them. But if somebody is here legally, even if they're not an American citizen, you know, they have rights under the Constitution as well. It's about human rights. Are we a nation that respects the rights of man, to quote Thomas Paine? Of course, back then the term was generic. Or are we a nation that only respects the privileges of the wealthy? Are we a nation that only respects the power of a single political party? God help us if that's what we have become, because then we have become like the Soviet Union. And I can tell you, I visited the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union. I was in East Germany when it was East Germany. And it's not the way that you want to live. It is absolutely not the way you want to live. And I see George W. Bush holding hands and, you know, with Prince Abdullah, the most repressive theocracy in the world, where every Friday they take people out and behead them for speaking against the government. Saudi Arabia, the largest lifetime patron of the Bush family, over $1 billion had been transferred from the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family to the Bush family and companies affiliated with the Bush family over the last 35 years. And I see these guys holding hands, and I see Bush arm in arm with Vlad the Impaler Putin. And I think, and these are our friends. These are the guys that George W. Bush Jr. feels so comfortable with. And I fear for our nation. We must get active. We must wake up. We must wake up others. And we must get involved. Join the Democratic Party. Join the Republican Party. Join the Greens. Join the Progressives. Join Democracy for America. Get active. Get out there and participate. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You walk too high, I can't see. Can't seem to reach you, can't set you free. If you can help me, follow the sound. Help me tell you all down the ground.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website. If you want to drop into our chat room, click live chat. Say hello to folks. I'd like to share with you very quickly here. Oop, hang on just a minute. just a minute. You got to plug these things in. Sometimes you mutter, 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 grumble, grumble. Yes, there we go. Okay. Want to share with you very quickly just a little blast from the past. Here, Mr. Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, our friend, good old J. Edgar. This was back when he was being blackmailed by Carlos Marcello and Santo Traficante for him and Clyde going down to the Hialeah racetrack every year as the guests of these mobsters. And and therefore he was claiming there was no such thing as organized crime all those years. But although he was saying there's no such thing as organized crime, he was saying that there also was no such thing as liberty. And this is where you get an insight into the mind of these, I don't know how to, these conservatives, for lack of I don't want to just, gratuitously swipe at them. The conservative mind, you get it that the founders, when they created this country, they said all rights rest with the people. All rights. In fact, there was this big flaming argument that you can read in the Federalist Papers. I believe it's Federalist number 54. It's either 54 or 57, where Hamilton is going on and on that one of the objections to the Constitution, they were trying to sell it in 1787, and one of the objections to the Constitution was that it didn't have a Bill of Rights. Jefferson objected to it on that basis. And Hamilton writes in one of the Federalist Papers, it doesn't need a Bill of Rights, it is a Bill of Rights. Because it starts out by saying that it was created by the people. The Constitution says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, blah, 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 do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States. Doesn't say we the government. Doesn't say we the select few. Doesn't say we the rich white guys. It doesn't say any of that. It says we the people of the United States. And they were serious about that. And in fact, in many states, slaves voted, women voted. There's this myth that it was only white, rich white landholders. Not true. That was true in some states, but it wasn't true at the federal level. But in any case, they said, no, we all have liberty. And the purpose of the Constitution is to prevent the government from encroaching on that liberty. Well, J. Edgar Hoover says, no, that's not the case. Liberty is not a license. You don't have, in other words, it isn't free. No, liberty has to be narrowly circumscribed. Here's J. Edgar Hoover.
All people are accustomed to taking liberty for granted. As a result, they have ceased to think seriously about it.
And then he says,
they construe liberty as a license and clamor for even greater license.
Oh, more freedom.
Liberty and license are as far apart as liberty and tyranny. License breeds tyranny.
You get it? They're not pro-liberty, these guys.
Americanism is on trial. Its real test lies in the ability of red-blooded Americans to meet and to defeat the fifth column of destruction.
Yes, meet and defeat the fifth column of destruction. Those who would seek liberty. How dare they seek liberty in the United States? As J. Edgar Hoover pointed out, no, we can't have that. Now, that wouldn't be appropriate. In fact, here's Joe McCarthy on the duty of the Republicans.
Our job as Americans and as Republicans is to dislodge the traitors from every place where they have been sent to do their traitorous work.
Yes, get those traitors out. How dare they seek liberty? Are you kidding? See, what we're facing right now is nothing new. It's been around for a long, long time. Every now and then it resurfaces, takes off the mask, and we see its ugly face. And we must, once again, at the ballot box, defeat it. 29 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Take off your hat, kick off your shoes. I know you're not going anywhere. Running around the town, singing your blues. I know you're not going anywhere.
And welcome. Welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. A report released yesterday. Actually, before I get to that, let me do this other story here. This I mentioned before the break, there were two stories in the news about the curtain being pulled back, how the curtain was pulled back. The first was this glimpse into the FBI and the libraries, the Patriot Act. And as I said, it's not a slam on the FBI, it's a slam on the Patriot Act and the legislators who have passed it and who are wanting to continue to pass it. Because we do need we do need law enforcement in the United States. It's a pretty straightforward thing. I don't think anybody's opposed to the FBI or to having police departments. Just like nobody's opposed to there being businesses. But the reality is that sometimes the rules are set up in such a way that businesses can behave inappropriately, like Walmart does, and that the FBI can behave inappropriately, as they do under the Patriot Act. And so our job as American citizens is to say, hey, we need to elect people to Congress and to the United States Senate, to the House of Representatives, and at the state level, who are going to make the laws that will serve the interests of liberty and freedom and democracy in the United States and the rights of people first. It's fine to serve the needs of corporations, and it's fine to serve the needs of government, and certainly we want to have security and safety in the United States. Absolutely. And we want to make sure that in front of everything else, the needs of we the people are addressed, that our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are not diminished. This is just, this is just fundamental stuff. Fundamental stuff. So anyhow, that's one curtain pullback. The other curtain pullback story that didn't get a lot of play in the New York Times, and today's paper, actually. No, I'm sorry. It's yesterday's paper. Well, the dateline is Baghdad, May 18. It looks like it was May 19. I'm not sure if that was the print date or if it was. In any case, here we are, the New York Times, yesterday or today. American military commanders in Baghdad and Washington gave a sobering new assessment on Wednesday of the war in Iraq, adding to the mood of anxiety that prompted Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to go to Baghdad last weekend to consult with the new government. In interviews and briefings this week, write John Burns and Eric Schmidt, some of the generals pulled back from recent suggestions, some by the same officers, that positive trends in Iraq could allow a major drawdown in the 138,000 American troops late this year or early in 2006. One officer suggested Wednesday that American military involvement could last, quote, many years, end quote. This is General John Abizaid talking about this. Now, are these guys going to get fired? Like Shinseki and Zinni for saying, well, if you're going to take, you can take Baghdad with 100,000 troops, but it's going to take 200,000 to hold it. You're out of here. Well, yeah, you can take Baghdad fairly quickly, but it's going to take a few years to hold it. Yeah, you're out of here. Well, these guys, they point out that this is in a background briefing, that the 21 car bombings in Baghdad so far this month, and we're only halfway through this month, well, two-thirds of the way through this month, 21 car bombings in the month of May have almost matched the total of 25 car bombings in all of last year. Is this the trend line that we want to be seeing? The generals would say no. In fact, one officer at the briefing said, and I quote, I think that this could still fail. Now, we're having a crisis in Afghanistan right now. The Afghan people are saying, hey, wait a minute. You came in here, you bombed our country to smithereens, and you promised us some kind of reconstruction. Instead, we've got the biggest narco state in the world, producing more heroin and opium than any other country in the history of the planet, ruled by warlords. The Taliban is back. Women are back wearing their veils and their burqas. Hamid Karzai, the former UNICAL executive, only controls a small portion. He doesn't even control all of Kabul. He controls a portion of Kabul and basically one other city, part of Kandahar. He basically, a little tiny bit of the countryside. the Taliban back, the extremists back, but UNICAL is building, or maybe it's not UNICAL, but the consortium is building that gas pipeline that UNICAL had been trying to negotiate with the Taliban back 5 years ago, back when Karzai was their negotiator. And the Afghan people are looking around going, hey, we don't have food, we don't have water. What we have is heroin and oil. Why is it drugs and oil? Or drugs and natural gas? I mean, we can't eat this stuff. We can't drink this stuff. It's not good for our children. And what does the Bush administration do? Blame it on Newsweek. Oh, it's all Newsweek's fault. Well, we had, a general come out and say, you know, last week, it's got nothing to do with Newsweek. Oh, but Newsweek made it worse. Well, a story that's been circulating for 2 years? And now the Pentagon's saying, well, maybe some Korans were inadvertently abused. It's not about the Koran, my friends. Yes, it is a crime punishable by death in many Muslim countries, including Saudi Arabia, our good friends, to speak ill of the Prophet Muhammad or to desecrate a Koran. It is a crime punishable. Blasphemy is a crime punishable by death in quite a few Muslim countries. Yes. But this goes way beyond that. This goes way beyond that. This is about people being furious that their country is occupied, that their government is effectively impotent, that it's not governing, that their needs are not being met. In fact, you look at this. Recent polls conducted by Baghdad University, back to Iraq. Recent polls conducted by Baghdad University had shown confidence flagging sharply. It was at 85% right after the election. Remember the famous elections? The elections that George W. Bush Jr. tried to take credit for, but in fact had been pushed by Sistani and Sadr. You'll recall, right after the fall of Baghdad, Bremer came in and said, no, we're not going to have elections. We're going to have caucuses. We're going to have people that we appoint, and they're going to get together, and they're going to decide who the government is going to be. And Sadr took to the streets. And al-Sistani sanctioned people going into the streets and saying, no, we're going to have elections. And they faced down Bush and Bremer, and Bush and Bremer blinked and said, okay, we'll have elections. And then it looked like the elections were rigged, because all the polls were showing that the Islamists got about 60% of the vote, and somehow they only got 48% when the vote was actually counted. And a lot of Iraqis are still scratching their heads over that. But in any case, after the elections, you had 85% confidence, according to the polls in Iraq, 85% saying, hey, things are going to get better. Today, 45%. As an officer off the record said to the New York Times, to John Burns and Eric Schmidt, a U.S. Army officer, he said, for the insurgency to be successful, people have to believe the government can't survive. And the insurgency is being successful, unfortunately, tragically, terribly, because of the bungling and incompetence of this administration, of the Bush Jr. administration. The absolute horrific bungling and incompetence. They lied us into a war that they didn't know how to fight, they don't know how to win, and they don't know how to get out of, and they had no plan to get out of. Instead, their plan was, let's build 17 major military bases, let's build an embassy there that's going to cost more than rebuilding the World Trade Center. It's over $1 billion we've allocated. We just allocated, just last week, over $1 billion to build an embassy with over 1,000 people in it in Baghdad. It's going to cost more than rebuilding the World Trade Center. And the people of Iraq are looking at this going, You're taking our oil. You're pumping it out without even metering it, as George Galloway pointed out. $8 billion went missing in the first 14 months that the United States was administering the oil for food. Where's that? Halliburton marking things up and still getting bonuses? Ripping the people of Iraq off, ripping off the American citizens? And the people of Iraq have less electricity than before, less food than before, more disease than before, fewer hospitals than before, less reliable water than before, sewage in their open sewage in their streets that they didn't have before, and they're looking around going, oh, and we're saying, hey, you're free, but by the way, you can't have Al Jazeera, and you can't have over 100 newspapers, but by the way, you're free. Oh, but don't speak out against the government. Because Alawi actually put the gun to the head of six people and killed them to demonstrate to the police how to deal with insurgents. These guys, this administration, in their rush to create a war hero president so that he could get reelected in 2004, they have created a disaster and they have blood on their hands. Brian in New Jersey on the line, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. Awesome to talk to you as always. I was just wondering, since the media is so controlled, is it possible that this Newsweek story was put out only to further aggravate animosity over there to cause more deaths, to maybe instill a draft or any of this?
No. Number one, as I said before, and as you know, I'm forgetting which general said it last week, but you know, one of our generals said that these protests were happening before the Newsweek story was publicized. Many of them were planned before that. It's the number one. Number two, the Newsweek is not reporting anything that hasn't been reported dozens of times over the last 2 years in all sorts of venues, from the BBC to Agence France-Presse to Al Jazeera to, you know, Newsweek. Newsweek was a footnote. The Newsweek thing is being blown all out of proportion by the right-wing blowhards mostly on right-wing talk radio here in the United States. And the reason why the administration is doing this, Scotty McClellan, you know, these guys better be careful, and Rumsfeld, people are dying because of this. The reason that they're blowing this out of proportion is because people are dying because they were not careful. They're the ones who lied us into this war. They're the ones who bungled it. They're the ones who are incompetently prosecuting it. They're the ones who have no strategy to get us out of it. They're the ones whose buddies are getting rich off it, and they're the ones who are now trying to divert attention away from their blame and blame it on somebody else. Blame it on Newsweek. It's got nothing to do with Newsweek, what's going on in Afghanistan. Nothing.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome, Brian. If I sounded grumpy, it's nothing personal. Yes, our media is controlled to some extent in the United States, but the instruments of control are actually very delicate. They're not as grotesque as people would think. I'm telling you, it's you've got all these correspondents in the White House, you know, being who the president calls on, and he's got a seating list. When he goes to that podium, or Scott McClellan for that matter, goes to that podium, he knows who's sitting where because the seats are assigned. A new, you know, brought to you courtesy of the Bush administration. He knows who's sitting where, and these guys know. They know that their salary, their future salary, depends on their ability to have George Bush take their question. And if Bush will take their question year after year, they get to keep their job. And if Bush won't take their question, they lose their job. Because it's all about access. Because the media in the United States is all about entertainment. It's about dealing with rocks. Bush is being treated like a rock star, not a politician, because our media has become about entertainment instead of information. It's infotainment, because we no longer have the requirement at law that in order for newspapers to get the subsidy to mail at lower postage rates, and for radio and television stations to have frequency allocation, and for cable systems to have rights-of-way access, and for that matter, satellite to have frequency allocation, we no longer say, if you're going to use this part of the commons, if you're going to do this, then you have to serve the public good by providing news. We no longer say that. And because we're no longer saying that, our information has become infotainment, and instead of news, you're getting entertainment, and instead of politicians being treated like politicians, like they are in the UK, I mean, watch Prime Minister's Question sometime on the C-SPAN. Go out of your way. You can actually watch it on the web even. Watch Prime Minister's Questions, where once a week Tony Blair has to sit with the members of the House of Commons and actually answer their questions. Your jaw will hit the floor. And this is how it's covered in a nation where the press realizes that it's still the press. Not so here in the United States. Because the press has figured, you know, because we, in 1987, Ronald Reagan said, hey, you know, the Fairness Doctrine, what's that? And in 1996, Bill Clinton pushed it a whole lot farther, signing the Telecommunications Act. And now they want to make it even farther than that. And you combine those two things with Reagan in 1982 stopping the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, so you'd have these huge mergers and acquisitions, and what you end up with is an industry that has no commitment to news any longer, because it has no legal obligation to provide news. It has a commitment to profit, which is how the system is set up. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I'm saying that there needs to be appropriate controls on it. There needs to be an appropriate system that says, hey, if you're going to use these things that are ours, that are part of the commons, you have to use them in a way that benefits all of us. And without an informed electorate, you can't have a democracy. Tom Hartman with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I can't keep up, and I can't back down. I've been losing so much time.
Well, I suppose that could be the Democrats' song. Welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. James in California on the line. Hey, James, what's up?
Well, I got some a new way to talk to the media, and versus, you know, we've got that problem that they're not getting to us, and what we're getting is what it's called Newsack.
Okay, yeah.
Elevator music.
Newsack. That's interesting.
News.
Yeah, Newsack and infotainment, yeah.
Yeah, it's Newsack, and so, you know, it's not too offensive, it's not too... you know, it's not anything unsettling. It's not real music either. Or it's not real news. So
yeah, I like that.
I like that term, Newsack.
I wonder if the Muzak Corporation would sue us for trademark violation if we were to regularly use it. Hopefully not.
Well, that's curious. I'm not a lawyer, so I wouldn't know. So maybe one of your staff could find that out.
Yeah. Okay. So Newsack, James, thanks a lot.
All right.
Good one. Yeah, have a good day now. Thanks for listening. Newsack. I like that. Okay, very quickly, the top 10 filibuster falsehoods. Maybe we won't have time for all 10 of them. We'll get to all of them tomorrow. But anyhow, number one, Democrats' filibuster of Bush nominees is unprecedented. That's a lie. Republicans initiated a filibuster against 1968 against Abe Fortas. It's a lie. Cloture votes were also necessary to obtain floor votes on Clinton judicial nominees Richard Páez and Marshall Berezin. And Republicans attempted to filibuster U.S. District Judge H. Lee Sorokin to the Third Circuit in 94. In fact, Senator Bill Frist, who's leading the Republican opposition, voted against cloture for the Páez nomination. The Republicans-controlled Senate blocked approximately 60 Clinton nominees through other means. Falsehood number two, Bush's filibustered nominees have all been rated well-qualified by the ABA. Blocking such highly rated nominees is unprecedented. Nonsense. They were not all rated well-qualified. Others have argued this, you know, in fact, they say, you know, Priscilla Owens was well-qualified, but of the 10 Bush nominees filibustered by Senate Democrats, only three, Owen, Estrada, and McKeague, received a unanimous well-qualified rating from the ABA. And, you know, they talk about Janice Rogers Brown, but she twice received an unqualified rating from the California Judicial Evaluation Committee and currently has the ABA's lowest passing rating of QM/NQ minimum, meaning a minority consider her not qualified and a majority consider her qualified. Falsehood number three, Democratic obstructionism has led to far more judicial vacancies. Nonsense. Number four, the nuclear option is a Democratic term. Nonsense. Trent Lott came up with it. Number five, Democrats oppose Bush nominees because of their faith, race, ethnicity, gender, or stance on abortion. Untrue. Republican It goes out. We'll finish it up tomorrow. Tom Hartman with you. Thanks for being with us today. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.